You are about to witness history in the making.
Hello, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to a special edition of the Pop Culture Gamers podcast. I'm not here with my normal co-host, Steve, but instead I'm here with a developer from Thumb Soldiers, and his name is David, and he's going to talk to us later on in the podcast about his very innovative controller accessories to improve some of your gaming. But in the meantime, welcome, David, to the podcast. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Been looking forward to having a chat with you since meeting you and David, yep. David, at EGX this year, because it was certainly, it was one of those things. I was walking past and I was like, what's that? Because yep. I'd not come across you before. And then saw your whole plethora of, quite diverse accessories for for controllers. But we'll get into that in a little bit. So
cool.
Let's do, because I like to try and do a profile of people, in terms of, where they're at in terms of gaming, because people enjoy gaming for lots of different reasons and have different origin stories. So we recently talked to Outward a bit about their new game that has actually literally just been released. It's arrived in the post for me today on the Evercade arcades. If, I don't know if you've ever come across one of those sort of things, those little retro consoles.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The new cartridge-based system. But I did an interview with them about Full Void. It's the first Evercade game that's a single game on a cartridge, so yeah, I'll be right. doing a live stream about that shortly. Anyway, so tell me about your video gaming sort of history. What systems did you start on, and what have you had over the years in terms of gaming?
I started, I'm sure your audience will remember the Commodore 64. That was my first computer gaming machine.
One of those.
Absolutely. I've still got mine in the loft. Yep, that's, absolutely.
That's the Commodore 64 full-sized, full-sized version of the Mini. So it's got a working keyboard. Great machine. That was my first one as well, was a Commodore 64.
Yeah, with the little tape deck and
The CN62.
Oh wow, it's been a long time since I've opened that box up.
was it the 1541 or 71 floppy drives as well? God, yeah, loved the Commodore 64, brilliant machine.
Absolutely. And then I progressed to the Commodore Amiga. With half megabyte upgrader, I might add.
Oh yeah, you had to have the full meg, didn't you?
Yeah. 512 just didn't cut it.
Yeah, no, definitely not. So was that the 500, did you say?
Yeah.
I had three. I had the 500, then I went upgraded to the 500 plus, and then I got the 1200.
Time,
and I had a massive 80 megabyte hard drive.
Wow.
How things have changed.
Yes, quite rapidly.
Yeah, you'd hardly fit an album on one of those now.
No, crazy.
It is, yeah, definitely.
After that, I pretty much jumped onto the PlayStations. I've had all of them. I've dabbled with a bit of Xbox and PC, obviously, from just always working on one. So you obviously stick games on. And I remember the first PC I built back at university. And much like you're saying yourself, it had using every bit of spare cash I could at a computer fair and buying a nicotine stain monitor, etc., etc. And I managed to invest in a 4 gigabyte hard drive.
Wow.
It's crazy when you think about it now.
I mean, I remember a friend of mine when I was at sixth form, sort of like college, said to me, why do you need a 4 gigabyte hard drive? You will never need that amount of information. And it's like, I've now got in my NAS, you know, 2 4 terabytes on a RAID backup system. This PC I've got behind me over here, you know, that's got 8 terabytes in it, and it's nearly full.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know, because everything's so massive these days. I mean, you look at, what was it, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, isn't it about 170 gig?
Wow.
It's like something ridiculously large. So, yeah. So you're a big PC builder?
No, it was a needs and must thing at university. It was early days of people having computers to work on projects, and at university it was a huge investment. So the only way we could do it was to go to a computer fair, buy all the components, and hope to God we could put them together and they would work. I can still remember there was like 4 or 5 of us all in the same room, all building our computers, all going, right, so how did you do that? Okay. And then when we all was turning them on and trying to get Windows uploaded and installed, it was all, if this doesn't work, all this money is wasted, you know. But we all managed to get them to ultimately work, and yeah, it's just stepping stones from there, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean, I remember going to computer fairs buying the Cyrix chips. Do you remember those? They were the forerunner to the AMDs.
Right. Okay.
Was it Cyrix? Sure, it was Cyrix.
Kind of rings a bell.
Yeah. So like they were the early version of the AMD chips.
Yeah.
And I remember getting one processor, and it was like, you know, like massively, like 1 gigahertz or something. It was like, whoa, this is the future. And I remember getting it home and looking at it, and some of the pins were bent.
Oh dear.
And I literally just went and back out, put it in, and it worked. And it worked for years. You wouldn't dare do anything like that nowadays with how fragile they seem to be. Computer fairs, used to go to them all the time. Do you remember the old Voodoo graphics cards?
Yeah,
where you'd have like a second card, and then you'd have a pass through to get your 3D to play a, like Jedi Knight and stuff like that.
I'm not sure my memory is as good as yours, but yeah, it's triggering memories.
Yeah, it's before we had the all-in-one graphics card sort of thing, you know, that Nvidia started. Because I think Voodoo graphics cards were like the beginning of the Nvidia sort of range, if I remember right. I think that was the next thing that came.
I'm sure that's what I had in my first one.
Mm.
Like, as soon as you said it was like ping Voodoo graphics card.
There was also, because I had a Matrox card, and it was like supposed to be the best one you could, but then I had for 2D graphics, but then I had the Voodoo for the 3D. You can't make it up these days, can you?
No, absolutely.
Definitely not. So what were your favourite games on those old systems?
Back in the day, especially during university days and stuff, it was... Gran Turismo has always been in the running. Tony Hawk's, many hours playing Tony Hawk's, and even good memories of SSX.
Grand Theft Auto.
It just, for some reason, like a few years, well, I say a few, everything's a few years ago now, a few years back, like me and the missus used to play SSX all the time, and then it just got getting harder and harder. It just, like, even the base package was just unnecessarily hard, and it was like it took the fun out of it, you know.
They make it more challenging but also ruin some of the playability.
Rather than just being able to do those rails and silly tricks time and time and time.
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, I remember, do you remember Tekken?
Oh god, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, sorry, not Tekken, Dead or Alive.
Right, okay.
And it was on the Dreamcast, because I had a Dreamcast as well. So
Yeah.
your history is very similar to mine in terms of gaming, but I had a Dreamcast on one of the way. And one of my friends stopped playing video games because of a game on the of Dead or Alive on Dreamcast, because he'd been trying to beat me for half an hour. And I'd only been using my thumb and he hadn't realised it. And one of my other friends was laughing his head off because he was like, and he ended up throwing, nearly breaking my controller and storming out the room. He was not a happy chappy. But I was just on it all of the time back then. You know, it's like I miss those days, really. But you've got to grow up, haven't you, at the end of the day?
Unfortunately, but it felt more, I suppose, not more social, but everyone was together. We'd all go around someone's house to all play together, all sit in the same room and take turns and battle games out and what have you. And yeah.
And I think that's something we've lost in this era is that couch gaming. And it's like last night, for the first time, I managed to persuade my son to actually come downstairs, peel himself off his computer, and we played Vampire Survivors. I don't know if you've played that one
No,
or
no,
not.
not.
It's a very simple sort of game. Basically, you just run along and it guns for you. And you get increasingly heavier waves of like ghosts and stuff like that coming at you. It's very simple, like retro graphics. It's one of these, you know, it's one of these games that you think that looks absolutely pants, and you play it and you realize that there is massive playability in there. And we ended up playing it for a few hours because he'd never played it before. I'd played it loads. But it's like just that sitting down couch co-op, you really miss, and you just don't realize it until you sit down with someone and do it. Because it, you know, it's so much more fun when you can see their eyes when you beat
Absolutely. I can remember, like, even sort of late teens, early 20s, we would all like buzz around a mate's house to play a couple of hours of whatever before going out to the pub or going clubbing, and it was just part of the ritual, you know. But yeah, no doubt if we could have just connected via the tinterweb, we probably would have done, but you didn't have that option back then. So yeah, you had to convene together.
Definitely. I think that gaming's good now, but I think it misses some of the magic that we had in, you know, probably our generation.
And
So,
you can't punch your mate when he's sat next
no, you
to
can't.
you
Oh, when you beat him, go, loser.
and
It's always that sort of like banter that made it that little bit more sort of special. So what do you see as sort of like some of your biggest gaming influences then over the years? I mean, you mentioned Grand Theft Auto, obviously, but
Gran Turismo as well. That's always been up there as one of my faves. I do like a racing game. I'm just so I've been so engrossed in setting this business up for a number of years now that I'm just a bit out of touch with it all, to be honest. Which probably isn't the right thing, but it's just goes hand in hand, the silly hours and having time to enjoy the things you enjoy. And it's just it will come back. It will come back.
I know, I understand exactly what you mean. So in terms of that enjoyment then, you said that, you know, when you do get some time, what are your sort of like go-to games, you know, so what are you playing at the moment, sort of thing?
At the moment, it's pretty limited. Gran Turismo again is always there. Final Fantasy, me and the missus have been playing, and I think, yeah, there's probably more games that I want to play than games that I do play. I'm really keen to start playing Starfield and Spider-Man. And I'm in a brain fart. And obviously the new COD as well. But they're games that I want to find the time to play, but just don't. It's a sorry state of affairs at the moment, that's for sure.
It's funny because from a developer's point of view, I can exactly hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
But as a reviewer sort of point of view, I just want some time to be able to play the games more because I'm going from one to another quite, quite quickly. And I've been doing sort of, I've been trying, although it's like, it's a bit busier at the moment. Been trying to do like a game of the day or, a couple of days of the week, game of the day sort of thing, and try to play something completely different and then, put it on our YouTube sort of channel, do some retro stuff as well, because I do love retro gaming. It's like just because a game might be 20, 30 years old doesn't mean you have to throw it out. If it's still fun to play, it's still fun to play. And ironically, some of the games you didn't find fun are actually now fun. But the gaming taste changed. So you said Final Fantasy, is that a remake or the original?
Not the new one, the one before that.
All right, so 14, sorry, 15.
I think so, yeah.
Kingslayer or however it. Yeah, another one. I couldn't get into that one, I have to admit. I got sort of like to the bit where you go to the garage and then you go and fight some things in the in the desert, and then just kind of petered out of interest with that. Although
Right, okay.
I've got the premium edition of that, but I started well, I've completed on the PlayStation the Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I've just started it on the PC, and it looks absolutely gorgeous
Right.
on there. And you definitely want to get on the Spider-Man games if you haven't been on Spider-Man 2. I've really enjoyed that. It's I've been live streaming that over the last few nights. But yeah, it's a really good game.
Yes.
So let's talk about what you've come here to bring to my audience, which is obviously your accessories. Can you tell us about the system and what they're compatible with?
They're compatible with PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, but so basically the system starts with a clip, a knuckle that fits onto the thumbstick with no tools, no disassembly, and then that allows you to add different soldiers, different attachments to suit different game types. So the knuckle, because it is so precise in its manufacture, there are different ones, the different knuckles for different consoles, different controllers. So we're trying to have a range that suits the majority, but at this moment we've start because we're new, we've started with just the OEM controllers. And so the PlayStation knuckle fits PS4, PS5, and Switch Pro. The Xbox fits the Xbox One, X, S, Elite, and Asus ROG Ally, I believe. And then the, oh no, is that the Switch one? No, that's the Switch one. Then the Switch knuckle fits the Switch and the ROG, I believe. Yes. And then all the soldiers are interchangeable between them all.
So the knuckle's the base that fits, and then because it goes in like a push in and then a turn, doesn't it, in terms of
Yes.
the connection? And it's really secure as well, I found. It's like there's no wobble. I mean, if because thank you for sending me the review copies, and I'll be you can see the videos of that as we're talking, and I'll be doing some unboxing later on of it, as well as separate videos. But in terms of what I found is it's really easy to put on and off as well, so
Yes.
that you don't once it's on, it's not like you have to keep it on permanently, because that might put people off. But I really like the fact that you've made it so easy to just, it's like a clasp that just you clip on, and it's so secure and it doesn't move at all, and it doesn't damage the stick either, which is another important
And
thing.
that was all part of the key elements at the very early stage is this has to be no tools, no disassembly. Nobody wants to open up a control. I'm quite handy with doing any number of things, but I wouldn't feel comfortable opening up a controller to put any mods in there. I probably could, but I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it. Yeah, to protect and not, well, not damage and protect the thumbstick ultimately, it had to be simple. Ideally, it could be done one-handed if necessary. And these are all really key elements of what the product had to be before the product was even a product as such, which is why it's taken so long to develop.
I mean, and they're really high quality products as well. You know, it's a very strong plastic.
Yep.
And I like the way that it sort of like comes in like a matchbox sort of thing. So you push it out and then you've got the little bag to put it in. And it's like, that's like a velour sort of bag. So it's really, you know, really nice. And one thing I did notice that you had at EGX was you had like your little case. Is that something you're going to be releasing shortly, where you had the Thumb Soldier logo on and stuff like that
So we've got them available. They're just not live on the website as such yet. Already. It's just, the website hasn't been updated to click a button and make it all live. But that's it's virtually there.
Yeah, no, I thought that looked really good as well. So, you know, like you, because obviously the last thing you want to do is have these things getting lost as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's absolutely great. So all of the sticks are obviously the soldier bits.
Yep.
Are compatible with all of the knuckles.
Absolutely.
Okay. So tell us what each one's designed to do, because you've got a whole range of them, ranging from like a loop, which is your driving one, and then a whole load more. So do you want to tell us all of the different versions that you've got?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of them are specific. They have specific games in mind, specific purposes, whereas some others are more just a new ergonomic, a new way of interacting with the controller. And then we've also got our adaptive products as well, which aren't just adaptive products, but they just allow people, again, just to interact with the controller in a new way, ultimately. I'm not sure. I've got some here. Probably, shall I show it, or are you going to?
Yeah. Please do, and I'll see if I have some video with it as well.
So the steering wheel, like you say, is it's kind of obvious what it's for. It's so you can put your thumb in and slide from side to side, and you don't fall off of it, and it just allows you to put such a lighter touch through the controller and just glide, and you can it allows you that freedom. It's like that those times where you feel like you're going to fall off the controller. And you need to readjust your thumb to take control of the thumbstick again. That's just a thing of the past. It's it just provides so much more control, so much more flow. And then that comes with a little throttle. Depends whether you use the right analog stick as an accelerator and brake.
Yeah.
It still amazes me that people don't. But to me, it's the most natural way of driving. You've got that, then you've got your gears down here, and you've got your steering here, but apparently some people do it differently. And again, they just then pop off.
I have to admit, that one was my favorite, because it's really I tested it out when I was playing the new Forza game. Yeah. And it just gives you that bit more control in terms of that steer, because you know, obviously it's race high, your thumb's further up.
Yep.
So it just gives you that extra few degrees, like some of the other ones as well. It just gives you a bit more precise control.
Yeah. But on top of that, the height is really minimal. We've tried to maintain the original ergonomics as much as possible with regards to the height. It does increase it ever so slightly, but it's because you've got that flow from side to side. The further you get up the side of the wheel, that then increases the height that little bit more. So the further you go around, the more control you have in the corners. It just all balances out. It's quite once you look at because obviously we've looked at it in much detail, the physics of traversing up the side, providing more range, which means at those critical points, you've got more control and more precision, and it just all works out. And
it's not something you can get with a normal controller because the stick is as it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might not want it to go all the way to the right, but just like just a hair fraction off.
Exactly.
It gives you that little bit extra height to be able to do that.
So from there, you've got the flow there, but once you're up here, you've got so much more range that it's just it just works. People are the feedback we're getting from customers that are saying that this grew up, like sometimes it's only a tenth, sometimes it's 5/10, sometimes it's seconds. But before they were using this, they had reached as far as they could get the time. They couldn't seem to improve their times.
Yeah.
And using this a couple of laps, and it's like, well, I've scrubbed time off straight away.
I think that's absolutely great for something that's so simple in its idea, that it's something that grasps onto your stick and then something you plug in that just sort of like it just does it straight away.
Yep.
It's a really good idea. So what other ones have you got as well as the wheel?
So another front runner from what everyone's talking about at the moment is the step ups.
Yes.
And so they are designed predominantly for your first person shoot'em games, your role-playing games, but they can be used for anything. And that's the beauty of the whole kit. Any of them can be used to suit the game you're playing at the time, the mood that you're in, the specific style of the game at that moment. And because they are literally, you can change them mid-game if you want to as well. And the step up allows you to have the low level agility for running around and your action elements. But then when you need precision, you step up to the upper level. And again, because you've got so much more range, it just creates precision and accuracy like you've never experienced for creeping, for sniping, for just those micro movements that just come into a game when you need it. And you just instantly switch between the two throughout the game, and it's just another level of ability.
Yeah, because I remember when David, the other David, showed me this at EGX, and I immediately started to think of like Sniper Elite, where that would be absolutely perfect. You know, when you zoom in and you want that, you know, just that bit more extra range when you're you know, going for something like the testicle shot, which is the hardest shot to do in the game. And then you get, you know, that all of that animation that goes with it, because I love that game for that x-ray vision in terms of what's happening to the body. I just think it's absolutely fantastic, because you don't get that in like Call of Duty and that sort of stuff, but I can imagine on Call of Duty that would be really good as well, especially if you're you know, trying to keep away from the enemies, trying to do sniper shots and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, and because I've tried that as well, and it works really well. It's surprising because it's such in concept, it's very very simple, but in reality, and then you've got the rocker as well, haven't you?
The rock and roller.
Yeah.
So again, this one is it's more about just having a new ergonomic. So it's got the rock from side to side with the edges that just provide an additional grip element, and then the roll from the arc of the gripped band over the top. But then you can mount it. If you mount the clip in the different orientation, you can have it sideways as well, and then have the rock forwards and the roll sideways, depending on how you set the knuckles on your controller. With this one, it's almost one of the most challenging ones to explain to people, because it is purely a new ergonomic, but the thing we say most of the time is people are coming back to us and saying, I don't know why I play so much better with it, but I do. It's kind of all we've got. It's just it helped people play better than the standard controller, the standard thumbstick. And yeah.
Yeah, I can certainly see why, because when I've, you know, played with it, it's like I've tried that one on, I'm presuming it's more for your fighting games that you were originally designed that for.
To be honest, the Rock and Roller, it was just something, it's just come out of my head, to be honest. It is purely because I wanted a smoother roll frontwards and backwards and a grip for sideways. And yeah. I designed and designed and designed, and then I come up with this, and I was like, that's it. That is what I've been looking for. Not for any particular game, just for a universal alternative to what we currently use. And this is the thing. We always look at it that these attachments, we've got loads and loads of different game types, different abilities, different all sorts. But we've always had a one-size-fits-all generic controller for everybody. And the way I see it is all these attachments are like different shoes, different trainers. You have different trainers for different sports you do, different activities you do, different so many variants, so many options available to you. And that's what we're doing for the gaming market. And it seems obvious. It seems like, why has this not been done before? But and that's kind of what it's all about.
Yeah, I think that the product, they are such high quality and obviously very durable in terms of the setup as well. So obviously it's very innovative product, and I think like things in VR, until you get used to it, it's something that you really don't think about, you know, because it's like trying to explain VR to someone. In order to experience the Matrix, you've got to be aware, you know, you've got to experience it. You can't really describe it. And VRs are very much a product like that. And I think that these controllers are actually very much, controller accessories are very much like that as well. Because kind of like you can talk about the logic, but until you actually sit and use one, you don't really get it. But once you start playing a game properly, you think, oh, actually, yeah, this is making sense to me. And I think that's what is so interesting and sort of innovative about it. Obviously, because of the nature of them, you know, is this something you're also looking at for, like, people who have physical disabilities to help them play the games and stuff like that as well?
Absolutely. That's been part of our, as soon as the concept developed in a way that it has, that was at the forefront of my mind. I've designed a number of products for disabilities over the years. So it was never in question. So as soon as I developed the knuckle and the system for being able to add all the different attachments to the controller, the rest came into play. So it allows customers to use it as a wrist rest or a finger rest or however you want to use it. It was just, and it's using the standard kit. It's not having something quite industrial, quite utilitarian. And don't get me wrong, those products that are available, there's 100% a place for them and a need for them. But this is more for people that just need a little bit of assistance. The current controller doesn't quite offer them what they need. And we're allowing people the most cost-effective, inclusive way of adapting their controllers to allow them to play in new ways. So again, you just pop that off, and much as you said before, an oversized thumbstick. And that's essentially what it is, but it allows you to interact so much easier in new ways, even.
And likewise that the bar one that you had there as well. Yep. I wouldn't know that similar thing under the chin and stuff like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So have you worked with like charities like special effects and stuff like that?
Special effects were involved in the product very early in our development. They can't credit what we're doing, even though they have put some posts out recently illustrating the product, which from what we understand is it's virtually unheard of. They can't, because they are a charity, they have to be on the fence essentially.
I understand that.
But yes, they had the test kits from very early days and were very impressed, and the comments that they've fed back to us is just overwhelming, super positive. We're hoping to grow the relationship in the coming months and see where we can take it.
I mean, Special Effects is a charity that we've supported on the podcast in the past. We've taken part of their annual charity fundraisers and stuff like that as well. Raise a few £100 for them, which is always always really nice to be able to do something for a charity. But it's also good that your product's getting that sort of visibility, but also that you've engaged with them as well. About it, because they are a very knowledgeable sort of charity as well. In terms of the design sort of thing, what was your journey like moving from, how did you come up with the idea, and then how did you get that sort of into practice? Because this is sort of like the Dragon's Den sort of isn't it really? And actually, have you even considered going on Dragon's Den about it as well?
It's crossed our minds. It's crossed our minds. But you got, if we do, we've got to play that game right. Hopefully, everyone would rather get into a position of success without going down the Dragon's Den route, because if it's not necessary, it's better. But it's not out of the question.
Yeah. So how did you come up with the idea? And then put it into practice. What did you go? How long's it been in development? How many times has a product evolved over that time, and how you got that feedback about the product and that sort of stuff?
Yes. Yeah, so the product first entered my thought process probably 20, 25 years ago.
So it's been a long road then.
And it started with the steering wheel. It started with trying to create that solution of not falling off the controller at those critical times, having a lighter touch, having more range. But it was just an idea that every couple of years would pop into my head again. I'm like, there is a solution here somewhere, but it just it wasn't coming. Again, for those same critical things, as it's got to be really simple, no disassembly, cheap to produce, etc. Just every couple of years would pop back into my head. I get a lot of ideas, and this was one that just wouldn't go away. And then it was about 3.5 years ago that I had, and as the years went by, I was like, but if we did this steering wheel thing, this wheel or whatever it was going to be, then there were the other options for the step up and the navigation and the studs, and they were all, and the disability ones, they were all coming into my mind. And then 3.5 years ago roughly, I come up with the idea of the docking clip. So if we had this clip that went onto the thumbstick, no disassembly, no tools, can't restrict the range of the thumbstick, then that could allow us to put all these different attachments on. And then for 18 months, it was evenings and weekends, calling on favors from everybody I know to help out in whichever way they could. And yeah, many, many prototypes. We quite early on in that process, we also knew that if we was going to do this, then we had to check the landscape, make sure nobody else was doing it. We weren't going to be treading on anybody else's toes. So we got a patent attorney involved just to check the landscape. And yeah, we was amazed that no one's doing anything like it. It's just crazy. And we searched internationally. So then, yeah, 18 months, 2 years ago, I quit my full-time job to jump into this full-time. It was a big step.
What did you do, if you don't mind me asking, before? Were you in like product design, or were you doing something completely different?
It was an element of product design, but more I designed a lot of things for a lot of big brands, ultimately, right. Okay. From retail interiors to all sorts. And that's what I've been doing for too many years. And yeah, there was a lot of deep chats with me and the missus as to whether this was something we wanted to commit to. And yeah, best part of 2 years ago, just jumped in and started full time. But then within the first month, the work I managed to complete would have probably taken me the best part of a year of evenings and weekends, you know, and it was just straight away, it was obvious that we'd done the right thing. But yeah, it's been a journey, lots of prototypes, lots of development, lots of learning, so many things you didn't realize you had to learn. And yeah, if you knew what you was jumping into before you jumped into it, you probably wouldn't. It's one of those scenarios, but it's all good. We love what we're doing, and we're going to make this work for everybody out there.
Yeah. So in terms of like that, the different product, the different like prototypes, was that in terms of like the physical design in terms of the way it looked, or was that in terms of like testing different like strengths of plastic and stuff like that, or was it a bit of both?
Everything. From even the knuckle, the docking clip in the early days was nothing like it is now. I'm not sure how many prototypes we've gone through to get that just right, and then numerous prototypes trying to get the Xbox One and the PlayStation One to be the same product, but it was just we had to give up on that. It was just too much, and we're talking like tenths of millimeters, couple of tenths of a millimeter difference, but making it work unanimously between the two products, it was too big. There were too many compromises.
I could see that, because I tried, when you sent me the knuckles, I put them on my Xbox, fit absolutely snug, and then I thought, okay, I wonder if these will work on the Switch. Put them on the Switch, couldn't close it. Then I realised, I've got a cap on, pulled it off, and then it span on
it. Yeah.
And then I tried it on the PlayStation, and it wouldn't close again. And I was sort of like, oh man, you know, it's like, and you look and you hold the, you know, I literally sort of like, you know, got the controllers as you do, and I'm going, but the same size. It's just so small. Very, very little manufacturing difference, but it's like how those even tenths of millimeters can make a difference to that fitting or not fitting or not even closing, because the you know, the PlayStation ones are slightly wider diameter, isn't it?
Yeah, and the Xbox is ever so slightly deeper as well, which all means it has to all be considered and work, basically.
Yeah, and I can imagine that must have took ages to just get that perfect, so it was grippy enough but didn't damage the control. I know you said it's compatible with the series, the Elite control, but have you actually considered doing like special magnetic ones that would just fit straight onto like the Xbox or the Edge?
It's definitely an option. We've covered the product and to give us that option. But it's the same as many elements of what we're doing at the moment. We're only launched in the UK at this moment in time. We've only been going for four. We only launched like 4 months ago.
Right. Okay.
And rather than going UK, Europe, or UK, Europe and States, and just being overwhelmed and in for falling flat on our faces, we wanted to start a little bit smaller within reason, so we can learn a bit as we go along, and then introduce more products and introduce more community to the whole project as we grow, rather than trying to do everything all at once and failing. We can fail smaller on our journey and learn from it.
No, definitely the best way, rather than overstretching yourself. So in the last 4 months, obviously you've gone to a much wider kind of market. I know that there was a lot of crowds around your stall at AGX. So what has the feedback been from members of the community?
It's just been incredible. There's been so many nervous times, as expected. It's like when we did our trial program, it was completely blind. We didn't know anybody that was involved. They didn't know us. Most of the trial program applicants didn't even, all they knew what it was to do with gaming, didn't know what the product was or anything. We wanted it to be as blind as that. And the vast majority, if not all, the feedback was super positive. And we gave everyone the opportunity to be completely honest and scales of enjoyment and et cetera, et cetera. And it was unanimously positive. But until someone spends their hard-earned cash on something, and it's a different thing. So once that feedback started coming in as equally as positive, it's overwhelming. It really is. It's we're helped. It more so than anything is when you get feedback and emails from people that struggle to play for whatever reasons they had, and they're sending us emails thanking us. It's like, I was going to say not in our wildest dreams. Obviously, in our wildest dreams, that's exactly what we wanted to happen. But you're not gonna rely on it, and it is happening, and it's just it's great. People complimenting and commenting on so many of the products and how they are genuinely helping their game, and it's just it works. It works beyond our expectations. There was a lot of scary times up to there, but
I mean, because consider it to be quite a niche sort of product, but I think it's one of those things of if the more people got to play with them in the different versions, the more it would be considered to be, it's not niche at all, it's something that's actually a really good technical innovation for controllers.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we want. It's not for pro gamers. It's just for everybody. Just to, exactly as I was saying before, you're going to play this game. I'm going to put these trainers on my controller for this game. I'm going to put these trainers on for this game. And it's just, it seems so obvious. It seems logical is the word. And that's what we want to ultimately get to. And we tried to price everything as accessible as possible, so there is something people can start buying their kits and growing it over time and having more variety and more versatility to their gaming.
Yeah. So thinking about that, then how do people get hold of the kits, and what are the sort of like prices for those?
So everything at the moment is on our website. We are setting up Amazon. We have to be on Amazon, but you've got to just make sure everything is ticked every all the dots and T's and everything are done. And yeah, just got to make sure that is as right as it can. At the moment, everything's just on our website. But we're constantly learning and adapting to what we learn, and that's one of the things we're implementing at the moment. So at the moment, the message is quite challenging because you have to buy the knuckles, and you have to buy the knuckles for the control that you want, and then the soldiers on top of that. It's a little bit, yeah, it's a little bit more complicated than we would like. So we're making some changes now where you can buy a starter kit, which is a set of knuckles and the soldiers of your choice, and then you can just add different soldiers as and when you want, really. Mm. You can buy multiples or grow it, or it's even the perfect stocking filler once you've got your starter kit, or a starter kit as a stocking filler, or if you've got them, then people can just help you grow your arsenal of soldiers over time, and yeah, get a little case, put them all in there.
Yeah, good stuff. So have you got any more accessories that are coming around the corner, or you know, as you know, because obviously people be giving you feedback and have you thought of and stuff like that, so is there anything exciting that we might look forward to seeing coming out,
you know? We've got a number of products in the waiting. Again, we didn't want to come out with too many. The message is a little bit complicated as it is, so don't want to overcomplicate it. But once the system is more understood, then we can introduce more products. That's our thinking. But they are under wraps at this moment in time. But then moving forward, our ultimate goal is to create a community where the community dictates what they want, so we can grow the product ranges to what needs are out there ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, good stuff. Well, we'll look forward to seeing some more sort of like technical innovations in relation to that. I know that you've been going to lots of different events recently. Is there any ones that are coming up that, you know, some viewers or listeners might want to come and, you know, see your stall at?
This is all a new journey for us. We didn't know we was gonna get so much from it, and it's more about learning ourselves what's working, what's not working, getting the product in the customer's hands. Like you said, once you felt it takes it on to another level. So yeah, we've realized strategically we need to do more shows, but they are expensive, and we've got to just make it all balance out. So hopefully we're looking to do Comic-Con in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. But nothing's finalized yet, and then moving forward from there, we've got to learn where we want to go and what we want to do. Fortunately, the other guys at the shows, we've made quite good relationships with them already, the other like stall holders, and basically everyone we've spoke to is just really nice and all up for providing us the data that they have to what shows work, how much they roughly are, etc., etc. And really good bunch.
Yeah, because you see a lot of the same stall holders. Like this one guy who's he's the one who's got all of the artwork. Do you know the one I mean? I think he's just around the corner from you. I don't know. I can't remember what his name is, but I've bought half of my room side behind me is full of his artwork, because he's got like the one he did was Kit Echo One and the A-Team fan, and then he's done like ones with Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica and Marvel characters and stuff like that. My son's got one of his canvas prints in his room with Moon Knight, so yeah, he's a fantastic artist. So you see also, you know, there's so much variety at these sort of exhibitions as well. And also I bought the Spider-Man PS2 controller from EGX when I was when I met you there from, I think they were just around the corner from you, the custom you know, the custom plates one.
Oh, the Undead Gaming.
Yeah, Undead Gaming, that's
Yeah,
it, yeah.
he's just such a nice guy, honestly. Just so helpful. Yeah, I was even like just messaging him before the show and going, "Is there anything I need to know?" Blah, blah, blah. He's just coming back, telling me everything I need to know to not trip over, basically. Unbelievable. Such a nice guy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, good stuff. And will you be going to Insomnia, do you think, or?
Quite possibly. Quite
Yeah.
possibly. Yes. It's all stuff we need to
All,
look
yeah.
into and budget accordingly. I'm trying to think, are they 2 a year or 1 a year, Insomnia?
Two a year, I think.
Two a year.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're, but they're a very, you know, very well attended, the ones that I've been, but they're sort of like gamers, influencers, and cosplay all in one. So it's, yeah, but I mean, I know that they're normally like that anyway, even if it's EGX, it still tends to be all the same stuff, doesn't it, at the end of the day. So what's your website then, Dave? Do you want to give us the plug for your website?
Absolutely. Well, fortunately, because of the name that we happen to call ourselves, we managed to secure Thumb Soldiers everything. So the website is thumbsoldiers.com. Our Insta is Thumb Soldiers. Our Facebook is Thumb Soldiers. Our TikTok is Thumb Soldiers. We've wrapped it all up. We've managed to get Thumb Soldiers to as our name, and secured the singular in every instance.
Yeah, well, that's really good. So
Yes.
dead easy, and obviously we'll let everybody know in our Facebook group and everything. No, and I'll also put the web address in the description, both on Spotify and on YouTube, so that people can pick that up as well.
Thank you very much.
If you want to buy some Thumb Soldiers, then we do have an exclusive discount. Just use the code PCG10 to get yourself 10% discount off your order.
Okay, well, Dave, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And
Likewise,
you know,
likewise.
say if you've got any more innovations in the future, please, you know, feel free to come and talk to us again and
Absolutely.
do
Well,
that
no
as
doubt
well.
we'll see each other at the shows when we'll catch up here and there, so that'll be good as well.
Yeah, no, I try to get to one or two a year, but it's like London's very unusual for me to go to, because from North Yorkshire going to London is very expensive. Whereas Birmingham is just like a couple of hours trip. So
Sure.
it's like, you know, it's like London is, because you have to get in and get across London to, you know, where was it? I forgot where it was.
Excel, so
Excel, yeah,
East London.
was a bit of a trek, wasn't it?
Yeah, they don't make it easy, and they don't make it cheap either. We're only just outside London, and it still costs a fortune to get into London, or either by train or by car or however. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Which you would think all those millions of people that would be able to make it cheaper to get down there.
Yeah,
Because
don't
we
get me
had,
started.
I'll tell you, that day we had a terrible day, because we set off, me and my son, we got on the train, and the train broke down, and we had to get off at Doncaster and then wait for the next train. The next train came, but we weren't allowed to get on that because it wasn't the same rail service. And then we had to wait for another 45 minutes to get on that while it was raining. And
Nice.
then we had to stand from Doncaster to King's Cross.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a, we were tired before we even got there.
Yeah, that does
Yeah,
not sound fun.
no, it was definitely not fun, but it was a really great day. Met, you know, met obviously yourself and also lots of other interesting people. So thank you, Dave. Really appreciate you coming on. Obviously, we'll keep you up to date about, you know, what we're doing as well, and everything. But thanks very much.
Oh, thank you.
So, in terms of you for listeners, obviously, if you're if you want to follow us, you can follow us on Spotify or any other sort of like podcasting channel. You can follow us on Twitter at Pop Culture Gamer. You can also email us at podcast@popculturegamers.co.uk. And also our YouTube channel, youtube.com/popculturegamers. And don't forget, if you want to buy any of David's products, then it's thumbsoldiers.com. This link will be in the description. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time. Bye now.
See ya. Bye.